I'm Greg Jarrett, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, October 9th, 2018. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. The investigations have begun into how 20 people were killed in a limousine crash, the deadliest vehicle accident on U.S. soil in nearly a decade.
It kind of gives the industry a black eye, and everybody's kind of shrugging their shoulders and saying, what happened here?
I'm Chris Foster. We're 4 weeks from Election Day, and more young voters say they'll be casting ballots in November.
Will they actually get out and make it to the polls, or will they let apathy take over and unfortunately sit on the sidelines?
And I'm Howard Kurtz. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
It's the country's deadliest vehicle accident in nearly a decade. Investigators now trying to determine why an old SUV turned into a stretch limousine, blew through a stop sign, hit a parked car, and went into a ditch in upstate New York. All 17 passengers who were out for a birthday celebration, along with the driver, were killed. So were two pedestrians.
We investigate fatal crashes all the time, year-round. But this one is, the magnitude of this one is a... different for us.
That's New York State Police Major Robert Patnod, who says the driver didn't have the proper license to operate the limousine and that the vehicle had failed inspections before. According to Department of Transportation documents, over the past year, there had been 5 inspections at Prestige Limousine. 22 violations were reported on 4 vehicles.
We'll determine if there's any criminal culpability on the part of anyone. If there is, we'll hold them accountable for it.
Now, NTSB Chairman Robert Sumwalt says they are also investigating. And of particular note is how this limousine was altered.
This vehicle, a 2001 Ford Expedition, started out life as a traditional Expedition, and then it was stretched. So we want to make sure that the vehicle, when it was converted, that was the conversion was conducted in accordance with federal regulations.
He says they're also looking at how the seats were configured and arranged and how many people were wearing seatbelts.
Some of the seats may have actually been bolted to the floor.
Brian Yenis is covering the story for Fox News.
They're looking at the design of the seats. You know, depending on the federal regulations, if you don't put in these seats right, it could actually potentially cause more injuries in the event of a crash. It is important to note that limousine crashes are actually pretty rare, especially if you look at the statistics, especially one as deadly as this. So there were a lot of questions from reporters, understandably so, as to whether or not everyone now needs to be concerned about limousines. And, you know, the NTSB acknowledged that that's still part of the investigation. They are trying to figure out what caused this and whether or not the lessons that they've learned from this investigation could or should be applied to potentially, you know, put in more legislation or to make it harder to convert these vehicles. We simply do not know. We simply don't even know whether or not this was a mechanical error at all or if the driver potentially could have had drugs in him. They're going to be testing and doing autopsies on the driver as well to see whether or not he was under any influence at all too. So there is just everything that you could imagine is being checked right now by the NTSB. But let's just say here, I mean, 20 people dead, including 4 sisters and 3 young couples. All of them were adults. This was a birthday party gone wrong, and they were apparently going to a winery, and so they decided to do the right thing and get a limo driver, which would be the safe thing to do. They also acknowledged, the officers, New York State Police acknowledged that they had initially been trying to get another vehicle of some kind. We don't know if it was a bus or some other vehicle, but that didn't go through. And so that's what led them to get this 2001 Ford Excursion with this particular company.
According to the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, there were 12 crashes involving large limousines between 2012 and 2016 and 12 deaths. Jim Luff is a writer and consultant for Limousine Charter and Tour magazine, and he operated his own limousine company for 25 years. He says they used the same model of Ford's Excursion limousines that crashed in this case, and he spoke to us from a limousine convention.
The Ford Motor Company operates under a program called QVM, which is Quality Vehicle Modifier. So basically, they give license to third-party rebuilders to allow them to cut their vehicles in half and extend them. However, they have a cap on that of 120 inches on the stretch. I'm going to say, looking at the pictures of this, that it was either a 140-inch or 160-inch stretch. And there's always a concern when you stretch a vehicle that long that there could be some buckling or bending in the center of the vehicle, and especially if it was overloaded. But the general consensus is, by looking at the pictures, that that limousine was designed to hold 16 passengers plus a driver. There's a lot of speculation here that there was brake failure on the vehicle, and specifically that it would have been caused by overloading the vehicle.
So I'm not sure how much larger the vehicle was, but it does sound like the NTSB and New York State Police are certainly curious about how much larger, you know, how that vehicle was modified. I mean, that seems to be a really important aspect to whether or not this was allowed to operate, especially because we also learned, according to New York State Police, that technically this should have been considered a bus if it has more than 15 seats and you need a passenger endorsement.
Correct. Federal law requires that any driver of a vehicle that is operating with 15 or more passengers, that the driver must have a commercial driver's license. And obviously that involves additional testing at the DMV, additional training, particularly on you know, the responsibility to a commercial driver of transporting so many lives, and how important it is to do a pre-check safety inspection before you ever load passengers. That's something that's done on a daily basis. And even one single vehicle, if it's operated by, say, three different chauffeurs in the course of a 24-hour period, each chauffeur that takes possession of the vehicle is required by law to do a pre-trip inspection that's documented in writing with the mileage put on the form and what time and where you were when you inspected the vehicle, specifically to track back to incidents like this to say, yes, the vehicle was inspected at 3 p.m. on this date as I took possession of it. So yeah, it appears something went wrong there. And the requirement for a limousine company to hire a chauffeur, I will tell you, is the difficulty in finding qualified drivers that have the right proper license, that have a clean record, that can pass a DOT driver physical given by a medical doctor. These are requirements established by the government, and a limo company legally can't hire a driver unless they go through all this, and the company is required to maintain a file on each driver, which is called a qualification file. And basically, you know, attest to the fact that this driver's been properly vetted before putting them in charge of 20 lives.
We've read and heard from victims, family members, and friends that the folks in the limousine who were texting them noticed how shoddy the vehicle was and how loud the motor was. Does that tell you anything that people were immediately complaining about the structure and the sound of the limo?
Yes, it does. And I understand that that vehicle was a replacement vehicle for a vehicle they were previously in that had mechanical problems. So I can't really speak to how they maintain their vehicles, but obviously if they requested a second vehicle because they weren't happy with the first, it's kind of indicative that the equipment wasn't being cared for. And I would definitely want to say to anybody listening to this, if you're traveling in a vehicle like that, I would demand that the driver stop. I mean, there's no need for anybody to put their life in jeopardy in a vehicle that they've rented that they don't feel safe in. You certainly wouldn't do it in an airplane if you were about to lift off.
But how would you know necessarily? I mean, we get into Ubers and Lyfts all the time. We don't ask the driver, like, hey, let me see your inspection, your pass inspection paperwork.
Well, while you as a consumer and I as a consumer might not do that, big companies like Chevron and Shell Oil, absolutely that. As soon as the bus arrives at a location where employees of a large corporation are going to get on board, there's an inspection process by those people that handle the transportation coordination. And they do ask to see the driver's license and inspection book. Because they place value in putting their employees on there and know that there could be a potential lawsuit for anything that occurs. But for the general consumer, I think just awareness of your environment, and if you feel that the engine doesn't sound right or the vehicle feels shoddy, I would certainly demand another vehicle rather than continue on.
You're at a limousine convention right now, right? 1,200 people are there with you. How worried are folks in the industry about this accident and what it means for them?
Well, I would say in general, the fact that the president of the National Limousine Association sent out an email to every single member saying if the media contacted you, this is what you should say, that that's coming from the top down, that we're concerned with the image that it gives to the industry. And we certainly want to let everyone know that the limousine industry in general is highly safety conscious. In fact, at this convention that I'm at, there's no less than five different classes that limo owners can take that basically teach them how to operate in a safe and efficient manner and put the passenger safety at the top priority of all operations. I mean, there really can't be anything more important than our passenger safety.
Jim, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
This is Howard Kurtz with your Fox News commentary coming up.
As a rule, younger people just don't vote as often as older people. Millennial turnout, people in their early 20s to mid-30s, and the last midterm election was about 21%.
I think a lot of young people either don't follow politics or follow politics and say, oh, these people don't represent me and the system doesn't work.
I think young people maybe don't vote because they feel like they don't have real power to make change, or that voting doesn't actually make much of a difference.
I'm not voting because I don't know anything about what's going on.
But more millennials this year say they will vote in November.
We're given the right to vote, and I feel like we should speak and we should elect someone who can like represent us.
I'm definitely voting. I think it's very important. I think especially with the way things have gone recently, with like Kavanaugh being confirmed and the Republicans having the majority.
Yeah, I'll be voting. It's an important thing. As a U.S. citizen, you should vote.
Audrea Taylor Decker is the founder and president of I'm Tomorrow. That's a political activism organization she started 8 years ago when she was 16.
Midterm elections are always lower than presidential turnouts, and we have a couple indicators that lead us to believe it might not actually be as good as they think it will. Gallup's poll said that only 26% of millennials are certain that they're going to vote this year. And there's other polling indicators that say that half of millennials that voted in 2016 will vote this year. So really, we're dealing with the same problem over and over again with this next generation, which is, will they actually get out and make it to the polls, or will they let apathy take over and unfortunately sit on the sidelines?
I don't know how much Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation and that fight will energize people on either side. I guess there are younger women who are maybe worried or heartened by his stance on abortion. What do you think?
Right. I mean, it's no doubt about it that the Supreme Court is galvanizing people to the polls on both sides of the aisle. But we also have these millennials that are still not involved, even despite that. You know, just yesterday I was sitting with some millennials and they said, hey, you know, politics isn't really my thing. And I'm thinking, yeah, politics isn't anybody's thing, right? But what is caring about the issues that actually make a difference in our lives and the lives of millions of people across the country and in our local communities. And we need to make that connection for millennials to realize that politics actually does have a direct impact on your life.
Well, I wonder how much of it is, they're all the same, Democrats, Republicans, they all, none of them are any good. But if the parties can drill down and talk about ideas instead of the identity, the letter next to their name, maybe that'll help.
Right. Certainly. We don't want to hear the partisan bickering between the right and the left anymore. We have no interest in that. We want to hear how our vote is going to make a difference for the issues that it directly affect our communities and our lives. And so both sides of the aisle need to do a better job of that. And they need to recognize that millennials are soon to be the largest voting bloc. We already have that kind of influence if we would simply wield that power at the polls. And we're simply not doing that right now. But we have that ability if we would simply wake up and realize that we can make that kind of difference with our votes.
Yeah, that largest voting bloc thing is supposed to happen, I think, sometime between this midterm and the next presidential
2020.
Election. Yeah,
in
the next,
right.
So in the next 2 years, people in their, 20s, early 30s.
Correct.
Will be the largest voting bloc.
They will. And they need to recognize that with that comes a really incredible responsibility. As a generation, my generation wants to make a difference, and we simply don't see the connection that we have to politics, which is really unfortunate. And so that's why we're working on college campuses across the country and with young professionals to help them wake up to the fact that we can make a difference with our vote for the impoverished in our communities, for our schools, for better education, for a variety of issues, for better health care for our veterans. I mean, mean, there's so many issues that really do help people's lives, and our votes make a difference in that, not just on the federal level, but also the state level and the local level. And so we don't get to pick and choose what elections we want to care about. We need to care about all of them.
I don't think there are any senators, millennials age, maybe a handful of people in the House.
Right.
Is that going to change with this election? Are there younger candidates that are going to maybe breathe some new life into Capitol Hill?
Certainly. I think we're going to start seeing a lot of younger candidates enter into the field. We already are in elections across the country. We see right here in New York, right, that there's a socialist candidate that is openly running. And so certainly millennials are going to be entering into the political space, but it's not all of them. It's a very small majority. And so overwhelmingly, over half of millennials have never voted, don't vote. And that's just absolutely terrible. And that's what needs to change in our country today. We can't have a nation where only less than half of the eligible population decides to vote. We've got to change that.
The cliche, I suppose, is that younger people tend to be more left-leaning, more idealistic, and older, as you get older, maybe you conservative up a little bit. I don't know. That's not the case with everybody, obviously.
Right.
Is that cliche true-ish? Are younger voters more, if not Democratic Party leading, liberal leaning?
They certainly are. And when we look at Generation X right above the millennial generation, they were pretty evenly split between Republicans and Democrats. And when we look at the statistics of the millennials, they certainly lean more left. But I would say the people that lean more left are the ones that are just politically involved.
Right.
There are a lot of millennials that are apathetic. They just aren't involved in the process. They don't want to register as Republican or Democrat, but they do care. They care about the ideals and the issues and the policies that are going to make a difference in our lives, and they need to realize that their vote has a role to play in that. Our campaign on campuses is called Because I Care, and we vote not because we like politics, but because we care about our communities, and because of that, we will pray, think, and vote in every election cycle.
As this younger generation, the ones that are politically active and do vote and do run for office, do you think that they pull the country to the left a little bit?
They do. And certainly they get a lot of media attention, right? Those are the ones we hear about in our news feeds.
The Parkland, Florida kids.
Right. The Parkland, Florida kids, the ones that are organizing marches. But really, there's a lot of people that aren't organizing marches. They're not protesting on the steps of the Supreme Court. They're not posting about their political opinions every 2 minutes on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. They're quiet. They're quietly living their lives. And those are the ones that we need to wake up to the political process. But certainly there's this portion of the millennial generation that gets all the attention on media and that is out there at the forefront of what's happening. And that's great. But there's a lot that aren't. And that's what has to change.
All right. In 4 weeks, we'll find out if the younger folk actually make it to the polls or not.
That's right.
Audrey Taylor, founder, president of I'm Tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Download Living the Bream with Shannon Bream.
Brett Baer, welcome.
Living the Bream, I love it.
We found it was the right level of cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe too much, but
No, that's good.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Howard Kurtz.
What's on your mind?
I'm here to talk about anger. I guess I should calm down before I proceed, but the reason I'm shedding my usual mild-mannered demeanor is that there is so much talk now in print on the airwaves about anger in the wake of the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation, and it's coming from the left. I mean, you open up the op-ed pages yesterday and just listen to these headlines. New York Times, Charles Blow, liberals, this is war. New York Times, David Leonhardt, get angry and get involved. E.J. Dionne, Washington Post, we need to stay angry on Kavanaugh. Now, it's fascinating because in the Obama administration, particularly after Obama was elected, you had the Tea Party movement, which was fueled by a lot of anger and resentment. And the general left-leaning media take on that is, what are they so angry about? These are comfortable people. And besides, they kind of sound like they don't like Obama. They must be a bunch of racist yahoos. But now it's kind of cool. It's fashionable to be angry in the Trump era, and particularly after this bruising, sometimes brutal confirmation battle over Brett Kavanaugh. But I was really struck by some of the language here. So the Charles Blow column in the Times about it being war says that the Kavanaugh confirmation is just one step in a larger political battle to fundamentally change the American political structure so it enshrines and protects white male power, in case you didn't know that. even after America's changing demographics and mores move away from that power. Liberals can get so high-minded, says Charles Blow, they lose sight of the ground war. Kavanaugh is only one soldier in a larger battle. Stop thinking you're in a skirmish. You're at war. The David Leonhardt piece, which ends up him basically saying you should go out and get involved in politics and in the campaign, and I agree with that. People who are unhappy with the last two Supreme Court nominations, you got to win elections. That's how your side gets to wield power. And he says that together the two new justices under Trump have cemented an extremist Republican majority on the Supreme Court, acting as a super legislature, throwing out laws on voting rights, worker rights, consumer rights, and so on. This is not how democracy is supposed to work. But actually, it is how democracy is supposed to work. Although Leonhardt objected to the math, Donald Trump was elected in 2016, yes, with fewer popular votes than Hillary Clinton, but he won the Electoral College. It's in the Constitution. That's how it works. Liberals don't control anything. They don't control the White House. They don't control the House or the Senate. We'll see what happens in November. And now there's a clear conservative majority on the Supreme Court. The answer to that is elections. And if it helps with your cause to whip up the troops and declare war and say it's a coup, and say how angry you are and say how angry you should be. I mean, the first line of the Leonhardt piece is, if you're not angry yet, you should be. Did you hear that? You should be angry. All fascinating to me because this is not the usual posture of the left, which is usually about rational discourse and debate and obeying the norms. But there are a lot of angry people on the left, and particularly, it seems, the people who write op-ed columns.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.